Changes. This is where you get mesmerized.
Welcome to the May 24th, 2010 edition of Get Resmerized. I'm your host, Res Miranda. Ooh, resmerized.com is where all kinds of free things are posted now. Even another new video. It's not me, but I'm going to do that soon, I promise. When it's not so freaking hot here in the studio. And we're going to talk a lot tonight about your brain and what to do with it. Get used to it. I'm not going anywhere.
If the world sounds slightly wrong, that's the way they wrote the song. Sad to say, but that's the way it goes. So
yes, here we go with our very first question. One card. You can find out a lot from one card, I'm always saying. Angelica wants to know. She says, I'm a little confused in two situations at present. The first is whether I should change jobs. Do have a feeling I should, but I'm a little nervous about doing it. The second is the man in my life the one for me? Gee, jobs and relationships. Isn't that always the question? Sometimes the other way around. Okay. Should you change jobs? We can't really find out about both things so much in one card, but who knows? What do I know? Let's go to shot. Your card, Angelica, is the Page of Cups. Pages always bring news. They're always making announcements, you know, telling people what to do and stuff, where to go. And the Page of Cups is saying that you should follow your heart. You should do what you feel like you should do. So definitely go with that instinct to change jobs. Now, this card, since you ask a question about love, I'm going to go ahead and say that the Page of Cups card comes up usually when there's a new love interest coming up. So maybe you have someone new to look at coming up, or maybe you can look at your current relationship in a whole new way. We should talk about that with a lot more cards than just one. So, you know what to do. Resmerize.com, where you are. Anyway, Amy asks, this might sound silly, but all the tarot readings I've had, they've always been so accurate. It's scary, but for the first time in years, I had the Lover's card come up and have been single for so long, I was looking forward, but it never came. How can some things be so right, but some don't happen? Now, I'm going to say something that may seem a little bit contradictory to what I'm just doing here, giving one card readings, but you can't really get the whole picture with just one card. You may have assumed, or the psychic giving you the reading, if it was just one card, may have just assumed that it was about love. The Lover's card isn't always about the obvious. It's about deeper connections, things like chemistry, and it can apply to things other than relationships and love. But let's also talk about the fact that a lot of times we're too attached to time. Let's think instead in terms of maybe it hasn't happened yet. Not that it never will, just because it didn't happen when you wanted it to. So I'm going to draw a card for you now and see what we get. For that, we get the Four of Wands. If we'd got the Lover's card, I would have just, you know, started over. But the Four of Wands is about walking through a new door. It's about leaving behind the past, starting a new life, a new situation, a new relationship. So I would say there's still time. Don't be so attached to when. This card usually comes up when you're very close to getting what you want. So stop whining. Nikki wants to know, I would really like to have a tarot reading, but I've heard it can be really unlucky. It can bring very bad luck. Well, that all depends. Is this something that I should keep in mind, or would it only be applicable if the tarot is used on a regular basis or abused? Okay. You should really have a tarot reading, but not if you're scared of it. I've seen this so many times. If you have a reading and you're afraid of it, or you're just absolutely positive, you just know that it's going to be, they're going to be bad cards, then they will be. The only people that I know that really tell you that this is bad luck or a bad thing are usually very religious people or people who are extremely superstitious. Neither one of those things have any place in tarot readings that I give you. So should you be afraid of tarot readings from other people? That depends on what they want from you. You should never be afraid to explore what it is, the answers that you're looking for spiritually. The thing to be afraid of is not talking to someone who's genuine, you know, or ethical. So talk to me. I'll draw a quick card for you because that's what we're doing. Let's just see what we have. Nikki has the Five of Swords. The Five of Swords is about moving on and trying new things. Isn't that interesting? Maybe you should go ahead and do that. With me, of course. You can trust me for the most part. To tell you the truth anyway and to help you out. All right. Our last question is from Manny315. I met this guy 4 years ago and fell hook, line, and sinker. But because we've got the spark between us, it's an interesting way to put it, it scared him away because he wasn't ready for a relationship. R.ship does not spell relationship, just so you know. If you're going to text each other morning, noon, and night, remember that when you email Resi. I like spelling. I like real words. It just stop it. Anyway, because he wasn't ready for an R-ship. Now we just text about every 3 weeks when I pulled a card and I asked if he was going to surprise me by turning up on the doorstep and got the 10 of wands but didn't understand the answer. Once again, one card. It's probably not going to tell you a whole lot. The 10 of wands all by itself talks about stress, being overwhelmed, having too much going on, having a struggle even within your own mind, but it usually has to do with having too much to do in your daily life and you just can't freaking take it anymore. That's usually what it applies to. So as far as a surprise by turning up on your doorstep, if I got that card, I would probably take it as a no. But once again, I wouldn't take it as a no forever, necessarily. Keep looking at it again. A lot of times, when sparks happen, like you say, it is scary for some people. And they kind of wait it out and see what happens. I feel like that's what's going to go on with you. But again, a lot more can be said about the situation, I'm sure. And I'd be more than happy to help you look at it. If you go to my site, resmerize.com, and all you have to do is send me a resmerandum, or you can hit the button on the side that says video chat with Res, or you can just ask me where the heck I am. That's changed a little bit. I'm not just always in one place or two places anymore. But like someone else did today, email me and ask me where the heck can I find you in this particular day and time, and I'll be more than happy to tell you. And you too can continue to live your life under the influence of resmerization. Who wouldn't? Mas quem nada sai da minha frente que eu quero passar. Pois o samba está animado. O que eu quero é samba. Este samba que me estou de maracatu. É samba de preto veio. Samba como esta tão legal. Você ainda vai querer que ele chegue no fim da.
If you'd like a free mini reading on the show, just go to resmerize.com and send Rez a resmerandum. She'll talk about you in front of everybody.
If we want to be free of the pain we inflict on ourselves and each other, in other words, if we want to be happy, then we have to learn to think for ourselves. We need to be responsible for ourselves and examine anything that claims to be the truth. That's what the Buddha did long ago to free himself from his own discontent and persistent doubts about what he heard day after day from his parents, his teachers, and the palace priests. Although he was a prince, born into a wealthy and powerful family, the young Siddhartha often just wanted to get away from it all. He wanted the space to think independently about who he was and what the spiritual path was about. Such free thinking was important to the Buddha's search for inner truth and his ultimate realization of enlightenment. These days, more and more people in the West are following the teachings and example of the Buddha and others like him. But what are these teachings about? What Buddhism really is certainly out of Buddha's hands. His teachings passed into the hands of his followers thousands of years ago. They passed from wandering beggars to monastic institutions, from the illiterate to the learned, from the esoteric East to the outspoken West. In its travels, Buddhism has been many things to many people. But what was his real intent when he became a teacher? At the start of his own spiritual quest, Prince Siddhartha left his royal home along with its many luxuries and privileges, and he was determined to find answers to life's most perplexing questions. Are we born into the world just to suffer, grow old, and die? What's going on? What's the meaning of it all? After years of experimenting with different forms of religious practice, he abandoned his austerities and all his concepts about his spiritual journey, all the beliefs and doctrines that led him to where he was. At the end of that journey, with only an open and curious mind, he discovered what he was looking for, the great mind of enlightenment, as he called it. He woke up from all confusion. He saw beyond belief systems to the profound reality of the mind itself, a state of clear awareness and supreme happiness. Along with that knowledge came an understanding of how to lead a meaningful and compassionate life. For the next 45 years, he taught how to work with the mind, how to look at it, how to free it from misunderstandings, and how to realize the greatness of its potential. This sounds very high and mighty, to be sure. But did you notice that it took conscious, ongoing effort on his part and 45 years to get to that point? Those teachings today still describe a deeply personal inner journey that's spiritual, yes, but not religious. The Buddha wasn't a god. He wasn't even a Buddhist. You're not required to have more faith in the Buddha than you do in yourself. The power in any spiritual teaching lies in what you learn about yourself, learning how to work with our minds to realize our full capacity for wakefulness and happiness. No teaching can ever really accomplish anything more than being a guideline. We can only satisfy our search for truth, our need to know who and what we really are, by our own efforts. Where do we find this truth? Although we can rely to some degree on wisdom we find in books and the advice of respected spiritual authorities, it's only the beginning. The journey to genuine truth begins when you discover a true question, one that comes from the heart, from your own life and experience. That question will lead to an answer that will lead to another question, and so on. And that's just how it goes on the spiritual path. We start by bringing an open, inquisitive, and skeptical mind to whatever we hear, read, or see that presents itself as the truth. We examine it with reason and we put it to the test in meditation and in our lives. As we gain insight into the workings of the mind, we learn how to recognize and deal with our day-to-day experiences of thoughts and emotions. We uncover inaccurate and unhelpful habits of thinking and begin to correct them. Eventually, we're able to overcome the confusion that makes it so hard to see the mind's naturally brilliant awareness. In this sense, the spiritual teachings are a method of investigation or a science of mind. Religion, on the other hand, provides us with answers to life's big questions from the start. We don't have to think about it too much, and indeed are encouraged not to think, but to just follow. We learn what to think and believe, and our job becomes to live up to that, not to question it. If we relate to anyone's teachings as final answers that don't need to be examined, then we're practicing a religion. That seems completely pointless, if you ask me. We can use all the help we could get. Because strange as it seems, we hang on to our confusion. We cling to it because we think it shields us from something. If we don't commit to an answer or a belief, we don't have to be responsible for its effect on anyone or anything else. But wearing sunglasses 24/7, we're only avoiding looking at who we truly are. We prefer to wear our shades simply because we're not used to the bright light of our own minds. The teachings of the Buddha, Jesus, or really any new thought teachers, people who cause us to think for ourselves, no matter how we label them, show us how to open our eyes to that brilliance. That said, we only ever have two real choices to make. Observe the light from a place of darkness and wonder at its effects, knowing it will one day overcome us, or become it. Make your choice now. I double dog dare ya.
What happens next?
Switchfoot with I Dare You to Move. And how you doing, Lee?
Good,
yeah.
See, that's an interesting, obviously, very well chosen as far as song goes.
Thank you.
For the subject matter discussed in the opening. You know, I think the hardest part of embracing something new is letting go of something old. I think that winds up being a large barrier for people.
A really good point.
You know, I think oftentimes, you know, or at least in my own experience, I generally can only speak of my own experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you it's like you get to a point where you're looking past what the belief system that you grew up with was or is. You definitely start to see the shadows on the wall, and you realize that it's maybe, you know, it's no longer filling the gap. It's
not what you thought.
Well, it's no longer right. It's no longer doing what it should be doing for you.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, and you accept that in a roundabout kind of way. So you start to look around, you know, and you know, maybe instead of going to a specific camp, maybe you want to, again, very much like myself, maybe pick and choose as you go.
Mm-hmm.
I found one of the harder things to do was to let go. I mean, I don't think we realize, even people are like, well, you know, I didn't really come from a very religious household or a religious background. But we're so inundated in this country through our media for the last X number of years.
Yeah.
You know, the concept of George Burns as God, you know, these, again, we talk about these archetypes and whatnot.
Right. And the angels that we believe in are on TV and played by,
There you go. You know, and in a larger sense, you know, I don't think we realize how ingrained we are in a particular belief system. You know, if you want to refer to it as, you know, Judeo-Christian in nature.
Well, anything like that, whether or not you were brought up with a religious belief system, as you say, have been inundated for so long. But yet what everybody does have, I think even if you call yourself an atheist, is a knowledge that one day this will all end. And I can't.
Well, see, but again, the reason I talk about this being ingrained in one way or another is because, again, that letting go thing.
You're right.
It's difficult to move forward, even though you know you need, you have to. You have to.
Yes.
I mean, I even catch myself. I get angry at myself, you know, and I refer to myself as a superstitious native.
Yeah.
You know, no, seriously, because, you know, there's certain things. It's like, oh, God, please. You know, it's you're probably the concept of like a foxhole atheist, per se.
Yes.
And, you know, again, and I consider myself to be enlightened beyond. But I mean, I guess technically I would qualify as an atheist in as much as I don't believe in a higher power as put forth by any creed and any type, particular type of religion or philosophy that I have yet encountered.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't, again, as you well know, doesn't believe that I don't think that there's probably something.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know what it is. And so I consider myself to be an atheist in that regard.
Yeah.
But yet I still have certain things that I can't let go at certain times because they're like my little life preserver. They're my little, it's hard to throw away everything that you ever believed in at one point in time, regardless of how flawed it may now appear.
Right.
And that's what makes it difficult. I mean, think about the concept of the Buddha.
Yes.
Very, very, very wonderful example to be using in this case.
Thank you.
There was no, I mean, he had lived his life for the first, 30 years of his life?
Yeah.
He didn't even know that there was such a thing as suffering.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's
and
exactly
I think what
right.
happens is that there are a lot of people who know and think they're dealing with it, but they've never really left the palace.
Not really. Especially here in the West, you know, we can talk about poverty or wealth in any situation, but that's just the physical side of it. You know, what struck me, and I'm not a Buddhist, I just want to make that clear, but what struck me in the Buddhist story was that he left behind everything.
Yes.
You know, and the point was, it's not that he knew he could do that because he was going to be taking care of the rest of his life. He didn't know that.
He turned his back on it.
Right.
I mean, it wasn't even a matter of, well, I could always go back.
Right.
He turned his back on it and just moved forward, which is, again, you know,
right.
what we're talking about here is beyond spiritual. We're talking about faith.
Yeah.
And we're talking about tremendous bravery.
Yes. Yes. And that, you know,
it's hard.
It is
That's
very
heroic.
Hard.
Heroic. That's heroic like proportions.
It is. It really is, because you're not, you don't know. Nobody knows. I don't care, you know, how good of a psychic anybody is or goes to. You know, everything is changeable, and you don't know everything that's going to happen to you next. But the point is, you don't find out really until you take that step of faith forward. You know, you don't see the door until you walk toward
thing
it.
With, with the Buddha, because there's such a backstory. You know, with there was foretold that he was either going to be a great warrior, or a holy man. I think very much like the Jesus story. Mm-hmm. And notice I say both these things as stories because in my mind that's what they are.
Right.
I think the backdrop was added and embellished. You know, and that's why, again, you know, I sometimes I think to myself, well, if I had to be pick one religion, it would probably be Buddhism. But by the same token, you know, the level of distortion that probably occurred from the Buddha as a person.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, like the Jesus as what Jesus actually, you know, stood for and said, you know, other than what they tell you is, because you're always taking somebody else's word for it, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's basically, again, you had these two great. And I guess it could be argued whether they're historic figures. I'm not about to do that, of course. So there's very
another
little,
show.
There's very little historic evidence of either, not for nothing. Mm-hmm. But again, two very brave people because they challenged the status quo.
Now, yes, and what caused them both to do that? Or what causes anybody to do that more often than not?
See, and I, you know, a lot of people make comparisons between the two, and I don't necessarily think that that's the deal because, I guess it's true because ultimately, I think both, if we're going, let's refer to them as men, okay, for the purposes of this conversation.
Alrighty.
You know, both these men were speaking about the things that make life better here and now.
Right.
And dealt with the inevitability of life's suffering, acknowledged it, and kind of gave a way of overcoming and living with it.
Mm-hmm.
Their religions, on the other hand, particularly Christianity, turned into something entirely different.
Right. Jesus wasn't a Christian either.
Jesus was not a Christian. No, Jesus was actually a Jew.
Right.
But, you know, again, for all intents and purposes, again, there was no ground, you know, there was no established, you know, we talk about the concept of setting precedent. Yeah. Again, and we talk of that tremendous bravery required to go and think about how many thousands of years, and man, a little quicker with Christianity, but think about how long it took for these things to come. Mm-hmm. Because as a species, we are generally not embracing of new ideas, probably because they require us to get rid of the old ideas.
Exactly.
Which we are hesitant to do anyway. Yeah. And then you have to factor in that there's usually somebody profiting from those old ideas.
Yes.
So...
yes, that will keep feeding that into it.
There you go.
You know, he went, when the Buddha went on his journey, so to speak, when he left everything behind, when he turned his back on everything, I'm sure he ran into a lot of people with a lot of good ideas, but he still, he looked at them, a lot of interesting ideas anyway, but he looked at his own mind and he kept asking, why is this that way? Why does this feel that way? What happens if I do this, you know, with my mind and with my life, you know? He really explored the nature of feelings as well, too, which is very important because it's feelings that are the creative force.
Well,
go ahead.
Again, both these men found, one found and the other said you can find, which leads us to believe that he found.
Yeah.
You can find these answers within yourself.
Right.
There wasn't any need to go to someone else. There was no need. Again, very dangerous status quo affecting the middleman.
Yeah.
Seriously, very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so. And but again, you know, the whole concept becomes is you find it in yourself. It's not, you're looking around, you know, there's no Sherlock Holmes. I mean, it's self-examination.
That is the constant in probably...
self-determination.
Right. Those are the constants, I should say, in every spiritual teacher that I can think of. You know, I'm not going to be dumb enough to say every spiritual teacher ever existed, but everyone that we would consider an icon, if nothing else.
Oh, you might consider an icon.
Well, somebody who is, you know, I could call a valid spiritual teacher, whether or not I agree with them, is that you find the answers within, and apparently it doesn't happen overnight, and it is work, and you go through a modicum of suffering.
It's an interesting thing that you just said there. Go ahead. I'll pick up on it.
Okay, well, that... they come to that to the point where they start asking the questions from a point of being at the bottom, which is the worst possible place, but going through suffering and or going through some sort of hardship, whether physical, mental, whatever, spiritual, whatever.
That's interesting,
and that is absolutely the hardest place to encroach on a journey of that nature. Go ahead.
Well, that makes me wonder about these constructs within the concept of, isn't that how a lot of the 12-step groups work? whereas it's you have to bottom out before you're ready.
Oh, interesting.
You know, I'm just saying.
I believe so.
And I'm not making that connection in a positive way.
Yeah.
Do you follow what I'm saying? I just think it's, again, if you're going to build the thing. See, that's the thing, you know, these build these things, you know, that's what these... You just said something interesting, you know, a moment ago that I commented that was interesting. You said, and I'm paraphrasing, so correct me.
Okay.
But you basically said, you know, there's spiritual teachers out there, and just because I don't necessarily believe in what they're doing doesn't make them bad spiritual. But doesn't it really? Because again, here's the deal. You know, again, it's not just a matter of the messenger in a case like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of the message. So if the message, if you can't find any credence in the message,
then
what's that make the messenger in this particular case?
Well, I suppose it on some levels that might be subjective. I wouldn't call someone a bad spiritual teacher
that's relative, good, bad. I'm talking about not finding anything in the message.
Well, then I suppose it wouldn't be a message, would it?
But to some people, and apparently that person delivering the message, it is.
Well, all right.
But you're not fond of that particular school of thought. Literally, you don't believe in that.
Well,
you know, like again, I don't believe in the Christian story.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Which means that what is the Pope? Does that mean that the Pope is a bad spiritual leader? Because
no,
I don't, you know.
I don't think so. I think it's all. See, this is why it's so important to ask the questions, because you don't. No, you know, not to just accept everything that you hear from anyone in a pulpit on a mountain.
Well, but it's subjective.
It is subjective, you know, but you have to ask the question.
Believing in a message is subjective.
Right.
Meaning, you know, Dr. X, okay, it's got this, it's got a, what do you want to call it? A philosophy, a worldview.
Right.
A spiritual message.
Right.
A spiritual belief system.
Right.
Whatever the heck you want to call it. He's got this thing. And person A, I mean, really digs it.
Okay.
Yeah, and that means that as far as they're concerned, Dr. X is a prophet.
Okay.
He
I
may
think
not,
I see what you're saying.
Hopefully he doesn't claim that for himself.
Yeah.
Again,
hopefully.
There are certain things that need to be bestowed upon you, otherwise they carry no validity whatsoever
at all. Right, right, right.
So, and not by family members.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
I think
person B, on the other hand, thinks it's malarkey.
Well,
does that all of a sudden mean that he's, you know, it's
that the teachings are invalid?
Right.
No, that's where we also must rely on a modicum of common sense. You know, you can have a religious teacher that says the spaceship is going to come get us tomorrow. We all need to drink suicidal Kool-Aid.
As a matter of fact,
right?
Was,
yeah. So, you know, you gotta, you know, hopefully anyone has enough. Anyone listening anyway, because we obviously some people don't have enough common sense to realize that they're asking you to do something that's negative. Are they asking you to do something that's going to, add to your life? Now, again, that's subjective. It can be so complicated,
right,
but just use your flipping brain, you know?
Well, I used to feel, you know, I used to, in a very liberal sense of the word, and I mean that with a capital L. Yeah. I don't even want to get into this, you know. But I used to, you know, again, like I used to feel bad about calling certain people stupid. It's like, oh, there are no stupid people, because I felt bad that, you know, I felt guilty about it. You know, I don't feel so guilty about that anymore.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about a lot of the spiritual malarkey that's floating around out there.
Yes.
Not for nothing. I have no problem, you know, calling it as I see it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I guess being less than kind, per se.
If they're asking you to believe what they say and do what they say, wrote verbatim, without asking questions, on blind faith, always, and just to completely trust them, and then that should be your trigger, should be your little light bulb right there. Mm-hmm. That should be the little, you know,
warning
angel
thing.
Devil right next to you, pinching you, going, wake up.
Right.
That's your marker right there. So how do you know?
Right.
That's how you know, in my opinion.
Sounds like sound advice to me.
I think so.
Welcome to the Psychic's Lounge. Your table awaits you. Walk this way.
I was just wondering if I should introduce you as the septic skeptic.
Yeah, I was going to roll that out at some point in time. I like that that title. I consider myself to be the septic skeptic.
I like it.
As he finishes off the last of the Sunkist.
Yes, go right ahead. Right ahead.
Okay. Better than the bourbon.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Well, not really better than the bourbon. For the purposes of this conversation. As they say.
You'll just have to take our word for it that there's no bourbon in the studio.
Right, right. So, well, I guess, you know, this Psychic's Lounge is basically mine. I mean, there wasn't anything here a few hours ago, and then I made a suggestion, and now
yes,
there is
did.
Something there.
Now there's a lot of stuff.
So,
yeah.
Well, I noticed because I saw you scan it, and it's like not one thing about the thing that I wanted to do.
Yeah, there
and
is.
Every, all the other little, oh, is there a little background? Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
See, just, you know, a word I felt was all that was needed.
Right. Well,
on the page.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess you're right. There it is. Like right. One word.
Right.
So as many of you, I would assume, know, unless you lived under a rock,
mm-hmm.
The series Lost had its series finale last night.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are really upset. Other people are content. This runs the whole gamut, as most series finales do.
Perplexed.
But one aspect of... and it's particularly the last 10 to 15 minutes that most people seem to have issue with, which of course makes sense.
Yeah.
The aspect that I found very interesting was when, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, well, then you don't know what I'm talking about.
Too bad.
But it does lead somewhere where we can actually bring you up to in its comparison where you may know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I found it interesting when Christian Shepherd, and that still boggles my mind that I never thought about that
dude's name. I didn't get it either.
But anyway, this is one of the main characters' father who died, and he was a relative steady throughout the whole series as well, too, appearing in flashback and forward and sideways and all sorts of stuff. He said the place that they were standing, they were in a church, he said that this place is it doesn't have a time. And the people who were here, and these were people who Jack, the main character, knew throughout the six seasons of the show. His father said, some died before you, some died after you. This place has no time. I started to immediately think of, like, the Akashic Record. And how it's timeless, and how everything is there that ever was. It's not just a matter of a recording running, and it's recording up to date.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm correct about the Akashic Record... Everything that's ever happened or will happen is there.
That's correct. That's how most, I guess, cultures see it.
We can talk a little bit more about Lost in a little bit, but I'm interested in the history of this concept of the Akashic Records.
Well, it's a Sanskrit word that means sky, space, or ether. Sanskrit, very old, extremely old language, as we know. It's used in theosophy, and it describes a compendium.
I got theosophied last night.
Yeah, right.
Oh, man, I'm still green.
Man, we did too, man. Good job, writers. Well, it's a compendium of mystical knowledge, which is supposedly encoded in a non-physical plane of existence. And it's been described different ways by different readers and different teachers.
But it's complete.
It's complete.
See, that's what's really interesting to me.
Right. It's complete yet changeable, which is
the
really mystical part.
See, so is there any room for cause and effect within this? Because then it's, because when we start talking about like the butterfly effect and whatnot, then I think this is going to get this is going to turn into something else.
Well,
I knew this was going to be a problem.
Look where you are.
Yeah.
You know, this is... If you're speaking of cause and effect in a karmic sense, yes.
Well, I'm speaking of cause and effect in and when I speak in a karmic sense, am I speaking in an Eastern or a Western karmic sense? Shove it. Just come on.
Not comic, karmic.
Well, I know. I realize. And that's why I said in the Eastern or the Western concept of karma.
No,
and then it turns, shut up. All right? I'll smack you around.
Well, you would
what
smack
I'm speaking
Edgar
in
Case
is when we change one thing, you change everything. A la It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes, in that sense. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
So, that's the best example I got.
Well, that's pretty good.
Zuzu pedals. So.
That's pretty good. You and Edgar Casey are pretty pretty much agreed on that.
Okay, so what did Casey have to say about that?
Oh, he says he akined it to the Book of Life. In other words, he thought it was the same thing. When we hear about the Book of Life, that's what was being referred to, which is consulted to see whether or not you make it into heaven.
Oh, geez.
But he says, well, you got to remember too that he comes from a religious, a Baptist
background.
Right, and
he's a brave man again, another brave man who had to break the chains that bound him.
Yes,
in order to.
Absolutely.
So
yet he continued to be a Sunday school teacher and to be in that whole
Darwin himself
world.
Had the same issue, not for nothing. Charles Darwin, the guy who put forth
Monkey Man.
Well. Put it forth as a theory, but yes, he was a Christian himself to the end
was.
As well. Too.
Yeah, he was till the end. That's right.
Go.
All right. So Edgar Casey believed that we're all accountable and confronted with our personal record when we die. Not confronted in a sense of these are all the bad things you did.
That's almost like some sort of combination of your life flashing before you and then St. Peter meeting up with St. Peter at the gate. And the pros and cons. I mean, this goes back to, Matt and the feather in Egypt and the devourer of souls if you don't make the mustard.
Yeah.
So,
it's
I mean,
still
this reinvents
scary.
Itself within, So, again, I think that's different than the Akashic Record.
Well,
I look at the Akashic Record as at least what I thought it to be, as again, just everything from the beginning to end.
Right.
Everything.
Well, that's the way I see it. But nobody can ever have anything
but an opinion.
See, that's
the thing, you talk about it moving.
Yeah, it does move.
I don't.
It does move and change, because.
So that means the end always changes as well, too. Then.
Yeah.
So what good is it?
It's always changing. Well.
It's meant to be something for someone to consult. It's a compendium.
A compendium, yeah.
For whom?
What good it does? Well, let me put it to you this way: if you're someone who can consult it. Mm. Then, and I'm not talking about being some, great grand guru or something.
Right.
But if
grand
you. Poopa. Right. But just for the purposes of this conversation, let's just say that you're someone who can consult it. And what you're doing mostly is looking at the present, looking at the records that have been made on behalf of someone else. Or even of yourself, if you have enough confidence to do that.
How different is this conceptually
and
from
the past?
The hairs on our heads are numbered, kind of thing.
Conceptual. Ooh, from that scripture.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's connected.
But it just seems to me, again, when we talk about the concept of, again, it's omnipotence itself.
Yes. Right. Right. I don't think.
I mean, I'm just like.
Well, as far as that particular scripture is concerned, I'm not sure that's applicable, but I see what you're saying.
Right. Well, but I look at it again, what makes God omnipotent, the concept of omnipotent, is not all powerful per se. That's one part of the equation.
Right.
The other part of the equation is all knowing.
And all present.
Right.
Right.
And that's
omnipresent
why,
and all knowing.
And that's why I make the analogy.
Okay. Okay.
In that context.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That doesn't
because it's I don't it's that moving thing that it's all of a sudden it's dynamic.
Well,
that kind of I'm not.
Well, it is because you can't escape the fact that we have free will. We just can't get around that part.
But the point is that free will and self-determination wouldn't if it's if it moves if this thing is within the area of being complete then.
Right. Right.
It's easier to fight fate than it is to fight oneself.
I don't know.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I'm not sure.
We
easier
talk
to
about
fight fate.
Well, it's easier to fight one's fate, to fight what one's fate is, than it is to try and fight oneself. It's easier to accept one's fate than it is to try and change what your fate is.
Yes, it is easier to do that.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, when it comes down to it, that's really the choice that we have, right?
Yeah. Well,
whether or not.
When we talk about free will, the only two choices we have.
Right.
I think.
Right.
And it's I think the hardest thing is understanding sometimes what your fate is,
Yeah, exactly. It's been described as, the Akashic Records have been described as physically, a physical place also.
Yeah, I see.
Something that's kind of like a webby kind of that's always moving, and
it's dynamic.
Can be
I get it.
So that's it just is. I don't know that we can explain everything, but the different, that's just one of the things that you explore for yourself and you have to take somebody else's word for it, pretty much?
Well, to some degree.
To some degree.
You got to take somebody else's word for something at some point in your life. I mean, it's just not, you know, it's a matter of trust. Who do you trust and whatnot?
Right, right.
But that's...
So, and it's interesting that that's what most psychics do, is look at the present and the past more often than the present, the future, because the future is changeable and...
Hit that last little piece there, and then we can talk about lost a little bit.
This here?
Yeah, the law, thing with Casey.
The law of one?
No.
Well, it mentions him because there was...
The end there with the hall.
Right, well, it's...
That's what's interesting to
Well,
me.
It's relevant, the whole thing.
Okay,
is relevant.
Go ahead.
Right.
Dag nabbit. Right.
The Law of One, Book One, is a very... You know, widely read in an old publication.
Right.
It's a book purported to contain conversations with a channeled social memory complex known to humans as Ra. When the questioner asks where Edgar Casey received his information, the answer that Ra gives is, we have explained before that the intelligent infinity is brought into intelligent energy from eighth density or octave. Eighth octave, which would be a musical note and frequency. The one sound vibratory complex called Edgar used this gateway to view the present, which is not the continuum you experience, but the potential social memory complex of this planetary sphere, or the term you use, Akashic records or holographic records. So
this is what they said. This is Casey was asked while in a trance, and this is what he replied.
Yes.
Context would have been great.
Thanks.
So always looking for clues at the scene of the crime around here.
So how this kind of tells us.
And he says
how,
that didn't he say that the hall records is under the Sphinx?
Yes, he did.
There's a chamber under the Sphinx.
Yes, he did.
And
he
they
certainly
won't look in
did.
There. Yeah, because he's all upset.
Yeah, he won't let him take
a
look.
That's interesting.
But this is, this was the most interesting part to me, that it kind of tells us how he does it. You know, he gets into a trance state to the point where his brain waves probably vibrate at a particular octave.
I could imagine.
You think about the binaural beats and stuff that
right,
we do.
Right, 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 right,
you know,
right, right, right,
or
right,
meditation, right. You know, theta,
and
alpha,
he
delta.
He was really accurate about stuff, wasn't he?
He was, again, in the whole
medical thing.
Right.
And I think the fact that it drained him and eventually killed him, I think it also bodes pretty well for his authenticity.
Right, right, exactly.
Because, again, if we're talking about oscillating and generating a tremendous amount of energy, like anything else, it can be blown, like a speaker or a fuse or
any sort
of electronic component. So I do kind of find that interesting.
Sure. If you've touched electricity before and got the little buzz off whatever machine you're touching or light socket or whatever it is that anybody does, you know, you feel it all over.
Right.
And so, doing that on a regular basis is really going to affect you.
So now, just back to Lost for a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Because like I said, I'm sure I'd be shocked if at least a couple of few people who listen to this podcast haven't watched or know of at least Lost.
I know,
so it's not like we're talking about something in Sanskrit or something.
So they were in the...
Yeah, so they're in the church. And, you know, again, I guess basically I'm going to speak as if people know what I'm talking about and not try to explain everything, because it's just going to make it that much more painful to have to give back on it and whatnot.
Right. Well, you just
so
have to
ultimately,
do
again, I found it very interesting, and it did remind me of the concept of what the Akashic Record was or is as far as a place.
Mm-hmm.
That the concept of everything that took place on the island, like a general gist of the ending, at least what I took out of it, is that everything that took place on the island did take place on the island.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning when people died, as depicted during the six seasons of Lost, they died. And they apparently, that the season six, what's referred to as the sideways or the alternate, was some sort of, the word that's being bandied around apparently is purgatory, which is interesting. Me being a bit more of a hardcore sci-fi fan, prefer the word construct. Where these people were emotionally banded together due to certain due to things that had happened on the island, a certain amount of bonding.
Yeah.
And as they died, they created a construct and went to that construct so that when they all died, they were all ready to cross over together. It was like, you know, they say within the concept of, and I'm not saying that this has anything to do with it, but my understanding, as explained to me, is that sometimes within the concept of reincarnation, you see the same people over and over again. This is where the concept of the actual concept of a soulmate comes from.
Yes.
Not the romantic bullshit you hear about
exactly.
all the time. but a group, it can even be a group of people,
yes,
where again it's just recurring over and over again in each other's lives,
right,
in some sense. So they obviously had an emotional bond. You know, I started to think about, you know, again, the people that weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess for one reason or another, just because they were there at some point in time doesn't mean that they were part of that strong emotional bond.
Yes.
I think in order to be in that church, which mm-hmm. is where they all congregated, mm-hmm. they needed to have some sort of strong emotional bond to each other.
I would agree.
Rather than just a passing through.
Yes, I would agree, because think about it. You know, we know already that we in some way, shape or form affect the life of everyone that we come in contact with. But it's varying degrees.
Right.
A total stranger What's you that? Pass on the street
it's that
light, you.
It's that, again, it mm. becomes, It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes.
Now, the ending right. of Lost, right. really, it was a little bit of It's a Wonderful Life. A little bit of the end of Titanic. If you've seen the Titanic, remember where she lived? And then
yes.
everybody, did she saw everybody after she died, when she got ready to die?
Yeah.
Jacob's Ladder, which is a tremendous movie, mm-hmm. by the way. You know, there's a certain, a lot, what the hell is that? Oh, is that
it's the cat.
Yeah. There was, I let him in too. I forgot he was here. So there was a certain element. I think again, I think the producers and the writers they opted to go with the spiritual for an explanation rather than the science aspect mm-hmm. of things, like, you know, Atlantis or ancient societies or aliens or any of that stuff.
Yeah,
you know, or,
yeah.
Which is fine by me. I mean, I love the show. I know a lot of people were upset and they're saying, "Oh, 6 years they wasted." I watched the first four seasons twice, and then she wound up watching. I watched the first four on my own and then told her, you know what, you should really watch this. So then watched them again, and then we started watching together all the new stuff from season five on.
I was totally hooked.
It's again, not since the X-Files, you know, for myself, and I'm a big TV guy, I hate to admit it, but it's true. And not since the X-Files. This is like a once-in-a-decade show, honestly. Maybe even more than that. I don't know if there'll ever be anything like Lost again. I highly recommend it for those of you who haven't seen it. For those of you that stopped because it got silly for you, well, then, you know, I don't
you
know
missed
what to
it.
Tell you. Yeah, you
yeah,
missed
you
it. But I mean, I just think that they touched on a lot of issues, you know, a lot of spiritual things there that I really found,
yeah.
you know, like even when the father was telling his son this in the church before mm-hmm. he went out and meet all the people that
mm-hmm.
were there. He was standing in front of a multi-denomination. I know I'm not adequately, I there's no way I could adequately explain Lost. You know, and that's a whole other thing, you know, being able to adequately explain it. My greatest fear, and this was before Rez started watching with me, and then certainly after, my greatest fear was that there's no way they're going to be able to end this satisfactorily, to live up to what they built.
Right.
The expectation based upon how good the actual build-up to
right.
the finale
right.
might not, and I was right. I'm not saying it was a bad finale.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying I think it was impossible for them to outdo what they had done.
Oh, no, agreed.
I think any ending would have been anticlimactic, quite frankly.
Oh, agree. Anything. I kept expecting them to bring the M theory into it or something, you know, parallel universes and quantum physics. And that really didn't happen.
Well, but no, they did. There was electromagnetism.
There was.
And there was lots
there
of
was
stuff in
Daniel
there.
There was Daniel Faraday, the physicist, and all of that. But,
there you go.
Right, right, you know? Right. But I expected that to be them to play more into the explanation for things at the end. However, I was very happy with the way it ended, too, because it was so intriguing when Christian Shepherd said to Jack, "There is no now." And
right.
And what are we?
Right.
You know?
Well, that's what got me going with the whole
yeah.
Akashic record.
Yeah.
Thing, there is no now. There's meaning where they were. There
yeah.
was. It wasn't. It didn't have a time.
Right.
It was everything that was or will be. It just was.
Yes.
It just was.
Right. You know, so, and what do we talk
no
about?
There's no tense to it.
Yeah. No tense to it. But what we talk about all the time, and not just me, but a lot of other psychics yes. and teachers too, is that now is the only time we really have. So the change becomes. There comes a point when now ceases to exist and there is no time yet. Everything, everyone that you were connected to, influenced or affect, you know, to the level that Jack did, you remain. Those things remain.
Well, again,
you know what I'm saying?
I know, certainly.
Yeah,
certainly. And again, with that show, I think what we need to remember, and I guess we lose focus and maybe just pulls it back into focus a little bit, is that in my estimation, Jack was always the central character of the show.
Mm-hmm.
The show opens with Jack opening his eyes. the show ends with Jack closing his eyes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's obviously everything was done through...
That was pretty amazing.
Was done through Jack's perception. And that's why, again, that this was all going on, how come it didn't? And that's why also he was the last one to, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To be ready to go.
Right.
You know, and again, we talk about they had the option of writing it either as the spiritual or as the science aspect of things. And this goes back to the first season with another character, obviously many will recognize, John Locke, where the concept becomes man of faith, man of science.
Yes.
And what I found most interesting or very interesting within the finale was Jack said two things at two different times. First, when going down into the cave to deal with the light, he said that John Locke was right about most things. And then coming up out and saying, and he later indicated that, at least, you know, I think Hurley said something, and he said, well, at least I'm right about one thing, meaning that he had conceded that the spiritual had triumphed over the science.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a major, major theme throughout the whole...
Right.
That goes right back to pushing that button.
Exactly.
Why do we push that button?
Yeah, so, because you just have to have...
You have to have faith.
Right. Right, because you don't really know what will happen.
And they're
you're told about that button. You're told when what was going to happen.
Right,
as it turns out, you know. So, and that's always in, like we were talking about earlier. Always,
what a
tremendous
show, though.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, I think again about, and that's why I'm baffled that people could be upset. You know, I don't know what they were expecting. You know, there's no way that this could have been put into a box and tied into a bubble.
No, absolutely just too much not.
Of
it.
And
absolutely
I think
not.
Enough of I personally that one episode that they was two before the end.
Yeah.
Where they did the Jacob background.
Yeah.
I got to find out who Adam and Eve were.
Yeah.
And the black and white stone. That was it. I
was
happy.
Right. And what the big magnetic thing in the ground was, where the light was.
Right.
You know,
anything after that was like bonus. I mean, what do you expect? You know, again, it winds up being like life itself. Again, it's not the destination. It's the journey.
That's
and it
exactly
was a
right.
tremendous journey. So.
It was a tremendous journey, and I enjoyed it tremendously, and I would even do it again.
And I highly recommend the show to anybody who hasn't seen it.
If you haven't, just go all the way through it.
It'll all be on DVD pretty soon. And it's definitely well worth your time. And
just know that, you know, like life itself, there are always questions. That's what we were saying at the beginning. You know, you find a true question, you ask it, and then you have to find another question, and that's just how it goes. That's the way spirituality is.
I am His Holiness, the Guru Pitka. Welcome to my ashram, the Ecumenical Intuitive Enlightenment Initiative Organization, or EIEIO. Guru Pitka had a farm,
EIEIO.
And on that farm, he did no harm,
EIEIO.
Fate is a joke. And as I once read on a wall in a truck stop bathroom in Barstow, the joke is in your hands. Oh my God, I just got that.
And now, Get Resmerized continues with your host, Res Miranda.
Miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest out creeps by on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway.
Oh, you're going to like this one.
No, I just, before you get started,
yeah,
I just
got to
say, you know, that Mike Myers movie, that was like universally panned.
The Love Guru.
And to tell you, I think maybe it's because of the, you know, of being in the genre, as they say, you know.
Yeah.
I think it was pretty funny. I do.
I did too.
I think it was a funny movie.
I'm sure there were those
level,
who were offended, but, you know.
Anyway.
Lighten up. Don't take yourself so freaking seriously. Motorway bosses have hired a full team of druids.
What the hell's a motorway? What do you mean motorway bosses?
Motorway. Highway. Road. Highway road.
Is this English?
Okay, it's a foreign story, okay?
What are you talking about? Motorway?
Just hang on a second.
Gas powered funny cars. Okay.
Ways where motors go.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Gotcha.
Anyway, they hired a full team of druids. to build a series of mini
elves.
Maybe they were busy considering where they were. To build. Do you want to know what the freaking druids are hired for now?
All right.
They were hired to build a series of mini Stonehenge monuments to drain negative energy from accident spots.
So how did they actually know that these people were like real druids?
I don't know.
Did they have some sort of card or something?
Probably.
No, honestly. Nobody knows. I'm going to say one more time about the druids. The thing about the druids, nobody effing knows. Do you understand? They had no written. They didn't write anything down. Nothing. Nada. We know squat about the druids. Squat. Neolithic. Squat. Nothing. Absolutely, positively nothing. So anything you've ever seen in the movies or heard or read in books... or any neo-pagan moron has ever told you about?
Not.
Is entirely fictitious. It's wild imagination at work. Why? Because nobody knows.
It's time to let go of your old beliefs on such things. The team, which has secretly been working for Austrian authorities for 2 years, is that they're at it again, is said to have reduced fatal accidents at one notorious crash site to zero after restoring its terrestrial... radiation.
They got the Autobahn over there?
Maybe
they could solve the problem if they just slowed down.
Right.
How's that, Austria? Why don't you try that? Just slow down. What's your hurry?
One black spot.
Truly they, yeah. getting cold.
They call, this is interesting, they call accident scenes black spots.
Yeah,
okay. One black spot's fatal accident rate fell from an...
between elephant
toes? No. Maybe here. One black spot's fatal accident rate fell from an average of 6 per year, that's all, to nothing after the druid treatment where they search for negative radiation with dowsing rods.
Druid be gone.
Right, I know, right? I want me some of that.
Sort of Neolithic exorcism.
Does it come with a cape?
Pre-Christian.
All I'm going to know. If it doesn't come with the outfit, I don't want to be one. Say that again?
I think that's ridiculous.
What?
Druids. I could declare myself a druid. See, I'm in the wrong business. I should be in the druid business.
Well,
it was either that or clean up crime scenes. That's another fun thing. Maybe we should get druids to clean up crime scenes so they can get rid of the negative energy attached to these crime scenes.
Hey, let's send some druids to Washington.
Here you go. My God. Anyway, next.
That. Senior druid Ilmar Tessman explained, it is a big job, you know.
Senior druid.
Yeah.
Druid in charge.
Right. Yeah. Big Mama Llama druid. Every one of these accidents spreads negative radiation over an area for a while. And in Russia.
This will be good.
Russian town to ban satanic heavy metal. Of all places. Officials in Belgorod, a town some 400 miles south of Moscow, have written to local cafe, club, and restaurant owners asking them to refuse to host heavy metal concerts in Moscow. Yeah, right. I'm not familiar with such music myself, but we've been asked to head off any satanic activity.
Not in Moscow. No.
A local... Oh, right. There. So, said a local official... that he's never heard such a thing, heard that kind of music before. Vladimir Shatilo told the Daily...
Yeah, they don't know where the bodies are buried either.
Right. So. The parents of youngsters, he also said, who attended such events would never forgive us for allowing the performances of people interested in satanic ideology, added another official. He cited recommendations from an infamous Soviet-era psychiatric hospital. Infamous Soviet-era psychic... Okay.
Right.
Hospital, said that heavy metal music, I just get the weirdest images when I say that, had an ideologically destructive effect on young people. Some local club owners appeared unlikely to comply. One of them, Oleg Proskovov, because something, told the same newspaper that he planned to hold a number of rock events in the near future, so take that, and that any official who tried to interfere would get a punch in the face. So there.
Okay. I don't have a very strong feeling about any of that.
Well, Belgorod has previously introduced fines for things like public swearing, restricting the number of people in the town's dance floors, and for waging a campaign against Valentine's Day.
That's interesting. Actually, that's something you could get behind, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Right.
Now that I think about it.
Well, they're also probably looking to generate revenue. You know, everything's going down the tubes. So
they're finding, starting Belgorod, the anti-everything town.
Right.
Jeez. Mingle Media TV Network to air new paranormal web TV series, The RIP Files Explore the Darkness. But you didn't know there was a Mingle Media TV Network?
No, didn't know that.
It's online. It's strictly online. I found it. It's pretty cool, actually. Online media and live web TV network company.
Does not make a network. I just want to point that out. Too many times it's been the case.
We would name names, but there are too stinking many. During each episode of their show, the group tests both a scientific and an occult methodology to determine their effectiveness as paranormal investigation tools. So they're going to go at it from both angles.
I'm reminded, you know, we were watching, I went on and I always go off on a tangent here, but heck. I got on a Mothman kick recently again. Oh, yeah. Every now and then I go through a Mothman kick, you know. So I had an associated Mothman with 9/11. Apparently there were Mothman sightings in Manhattan, supposedly around 9/11. Fascinating. Supposedly some photos. I'm not saying I believe it. I'm not saying I know. The only reason that this little diatribe or side of tribe, I guess, I just made a word, has any relevance is because you were talking about scientific and occult mythology, right? So we're watching sci-fi when back when they were sci-fi.
Yeah.
Meaning it was spelled the way it used to be spelled as opposed to the way it's spelled now. They had a series called Sci-Fi Investigates, and they happened to do... I never watched it. I think it was before my time, meaning before I was stealing stuff off the internet. they did a show on Mothman, which covered all the general stuff, you know, because there's only so much you can go, and, you know, and everybody's done Mothman, a lot of paranormal shows. But they had this guy who is their skeptic on their team. The dude was, like, Shaggy.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Oh my god.
I mean, I'm like, I was embarrassed.
He even, you know, okay, I hate it when anybody wears their baseball cap backwards. You just look retarded. I'm sorry. But this guy was like a 10-year-old.
Septic skeptic, by the way.
Yeah, right. That's what he came up with.
That's why it ties back.
Yeah, right. So they're going to, that was awful. I hadn't heard that Mothman 9/11 thing either, but
it's
pretty interesting. Yeah. So they're, I'm going to check this show out because two reasons.
Another show. Great one.
But this one looks to be a little bit different because they're going to go, you know, I want to see what kind of investigations they do from both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Okay. Mingle Media TV, and I'll put the link on my site.
That's
and
fine,
everything.
Great. Yeah, we'll keep you posted because I'm not going to be watching. Now, literally, gee, you know, it's fun to keep you posted. It's like, wow, that's a phrase made for the internet, isn't it? But how old is that?
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's like Pink Floyd on Wish You Were Here putting that little scratchy sound.
Yeah.
So then when it got transferred over digitally, that scratchy sound would be preserved.
Uh-huh.
Even though they didn't know. Isn't that
wild? I love that.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, I really like that.
I'll keep you posted. People have been saying that for like, what, 50 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
Better than saying I'll keep you poked.
Yeah, that's true. Nice, Patsy?
Yes.
This is the one, you know, and it just, every now and then this happens. Nancy Marks.
Who's Nancy
Marks? A psychic from Lafayette, Colorado.
Oh, okay.
Was arrested for fraud after telling clients that their money was evil and that she'd take their cursed cash.
How much money?
So the money would suffer instead. Marks made at least $290,000.
Oh, these are some really stupid people.
I'm saying.
Really stupid people.
Yeah. Marks, who runs a psychic reading business.
How come we don't know any really stupid people?
Because we never, hardly ever leave the house.
Really stupid people.
And that's why.
Nice. She did it over the internet?
No, she did this in person. Oh, okay. This in person,
Because like federal becomes like some sort of fraud.
Oh, big time. See, she did this whole thing where she would warn the victims that malicious spirits were haunting their bank accounts. Yeah. I couldn't even do that with a straight face. Are you kidding me?
Malicious spirits haunting my cookie jar.
Yeah, right. They sure are.
Somebody's eating all those
cookies. Leave my peanut butter alone. I'll have to hurt you. Warn victims that malicious spirits were haunting their bank accounts. And she would take the evil assets off their hands.
Nice.
You know, her scam would have continued had somebody, of course, called the cops on her. The woman who turned her in said that she was told that for each evil spirit, that a certain number of $1,000 was needed per spirit.
What's the, wait a second. Marks was charged with 2 counts of theft over $20,000. Mm-hmm. I get that.
Right.
And 1 count of criminal impersonation. What the hell is that?
I don't know, because she sounds like a real criminal to me.
Yeah. What is criminal in person that find out something new every
I,
day?
Yeah, I would assume that it's something that she was just, you know, pretending to be something that she wasn't.
Wait a minute. Vigo the Carpathian? Is that what she did? Isn't that from Ghostbusters?
Yes, it is.
Oh, my God. If Mark told you Vigo the Carpathian was exercising demonic influence over your bank account, you can contact it. That's a legitimate story.
That's a legitimate story.
Vigo the Carpathian.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Can you even believe
that? That's crazy. I'm saying, now it's, before it was just kind of like, all right.
You thought it was just another one of those psychic fraud stories where they, you know, busted.
Vigo the Carpathian. Nice.
I know. No. Oh, man.
That's the dude who was in Ally McBeal as well, too.
That's right.
Isn't that the guy he played?
Vigo, somebody or other.
The museum director who became possessed by Vigo the Carpathian.
Yeah, right.
That's crazy. That's from Ghostbusters, too.
Can
actually.
You believe that?
Yeah. That's crazy.
Call detectives at 303-665-5571.
I can't, you know, I wouldn't have the, I wouldn't have the stones. I wouldn't have the stones to do it.
I know, right?
Carpathian.
Nice. I know. At least make up a name if you're going to be.
Yeah.
Never use, and I wish people would stop doing this on the radio as well. Stop using movie references to make it sound like you have any kind of credibility whatsoever.
That is a long ass quote, by the way.
I know.
All right, go ahead. My God.
The kingdom will not come by waiting for it. It will not be a matter of saying here it is or there it is. Rather, the kingdom of the Father is spread out upon the earth and men do not see it. This is about what we were talking about in the beginning. Mm. Let him who seeks continue seeking until he finds. When he finds, he will become troubled, like the Buddha. When he becomes troubled, he will be astonished and he will rule over all things.
Where's that from?
Gospel of Thomas.
Which is one of the Gnostic Gospels?
That's correct.
You should tell people that so they don't go looking in the wrong place.
I'm glad you did.
Yep.
From Lee and me, thank you for listening and rest in peace.
Down here. If you're not careful, all the children will dance about outside your window singing Sourpuss and Grumpy Face. And you wouldn't want that, now would you?
And now you are alone, my friend.
We thank you for being brave enough to get mesmerized for a little while, but we can't stay. We release you now to your world of creature comforts and reality as you perceive it to be, hoping that you will not be quite the same as you ever were. Do come again.